Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you, Chicago, for this humbling victory. All I can say, you sure know how to make a guy feel at home.
Yeah! How's it going, everybody? Your Ben Jarofsky Show is just moments away. But before we do this, let's thank our sponsors. Sponsors like SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and of course, today's show is brought to you by Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, what kind of pot to smoke, and so much more. It's legal in Illinois now. Chicago Reader, ChicagoReader.com. Subscribe, and if you want to help out this program, you can. ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky, and you can become a binhead. J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y. It is Thursday, October 21st. And live from my apartment and his attic, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, two, count them, two, long-awaited returns. Delmarie Cobb comes back, and we welcome back Candace Casillo. Now your host, not really a long-awaited return. He was here yesterday. Chicago Raider columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Do You Believe Him Thursday. And here's why. The him in that sentence, of course, is former mayor of the city of Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Joe Biden, in his infinite diswisdom, if that's such a word, thought it would be a good idea to resurrect Rahm Emanuel's career by nominating him to be the ambassador to Japan.
Thank you, Chicago.
No. Thank you, Joe Biden, you should be saying, Mayor Rahm. Nobody in Chicago wanted it. At best, you're like, at best we could come up. Well, no, this is actually not true. Mayor Rahm found 9 Chicagoans to endorse his position as ambassador to Japan. We'll get into that in a little while. But anyway, I don't know many people in the city of Chicago who endorse Mayor Rahm other than those 9 aforementioned Chicagoans who are aldermen. The best we could come up on our show is my dear friend Monroe Anderson, who says he's agnostic on the matter, and he doesn't want to waste his time discussing it, that kind of thing. That's as best as Rahm could get. But anyway, I asked the question, do you believe him? And I'm going to read a paragraph from today's story in the Tribune about Rahm's appearance at the Senate, before the Senate, on his confirmation testimony. And here's what he said, quote, I am the mayor. Oh, no, here we go. 7 years ago, a young man had his life taken on the street in the city of Chicago. He had all the promise ahead of him, and a police officer took his life, killed him. I said then, I am the mayor, and I'm responsible and accountable for fixing this so this never happens again. And to be honest, there is not a day or week that has gone by in the last 7 years I haven't thought about this and the what ifs and the changes and what could have been, end of quote. So the question is, do you believe him when he says a day or week? You notice how he, even then, he started with the day and then he cut it back to a week. He's just like, give himself a little space there, huh? Do you think a day or week goes by where Mayor Rahm thinks about Laquan McDonald? Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to sound cynical. I hate to sound jaded, but I do not believe that statement is true. I don't think Rahm Emanuel has thought about Laquan McDonald once until his confirmation hearing, and suddenly he had to think about a way to dodge and duck. The questions, the hard questions about how he handled the murder of Laquan McDonald. But you know what? Let's turn to other people for their thoughts on this. Without any ado, I will now turn to dear friend of this show, political strategist Delmarie Cobb. Delmarie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, you heard her on the show. Delmarie is leading the charge against Mayor Rahm. She's been on my show several times. She was on Mike Flannery's show last night. Perry Small, my good friend over VON. She's sounding the alarm wherever she can. So, Delmarie, I'm going to ask you. You came on my show. You said you did not think Rahm should be appointed ambassador to Japan. I know you listened to that testimony, or at the very least, you read it. So when Rahm said, and I quote, "There is not a day or week that has gone by in the last 7 years I haven't thought about this and the what ifs and the changes and what could have been," do you believe him? Go, Delmarie.
I do believe him. The reason I believe him is because he would still be mayor. And he probably can't get that out of his head, that if it weren't for that, he would still be mayor of Chicago and wouldn't have to be begging for someone to find an opening for him so he can be somewhere else and have a new platform. So he enjoyed being mayor of Chicago and would have probably enjoyed being here just like Richard Daley did, Richard M. and M. Richard J. And but for Laquan McDonald and that video, he would still be mayor. So I do believe he thinks about it every day.
So you're probably right. And you have a different spin on things than I did. And now I'm beginning to see the light. Because silly, naive me, Delmarie Cobb, and I apologize to all my listeners for being so naive. I thought what he meant was a day doesn't go by when he's not haunted by the tragedy of what happened to Laquan McDonald and the tragedy of relationships between police officers and the black community and the immense struggles that Chicago has faced on this issue going back to the last century, to like the 30s, etc. I thought that's what he was thinking about. But now what you're telling me is that what he thinks about every day is, damn it, I could still be mayor of the city of Chicago if that kid hadn't been killed. Is that what you're getting at, Delmarie?
I'm saying you're putting your sensibilities on Rahm Emanuel.
That's a dangerous thing to do.
We know that Rahm Emanuel doesn't give a damn about black people.
Yeah. And yet, Delmarie, black people have done so much for Rahm Emanuel. And let's just pause and think about that. You know, I'm reminded of what Doc Rivers, the coach, said in the middle of the right in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. Mm-hmm. About how black people have loved America so much and America has not loved it back. Mm-hmm. And Rahm Emanuel was elected twice thanks to the votes of black people. And yesterday, he was supported by 9 black aldermen who signed a letter endorsing him, which gave the Democrats the cover. You know how the game is played, Delmarie. That gave the Democrats the cover to put him forward and go, hey, you know, black people in Chicago like him, so what's the big deal?
And not only do black people in Chicago, when you have the head of the Black Caucus, which he made sure he said the Black Caucus leadership. But then you have a relative who had been outspoken about what happened to his great nephew. And then he supports Rahm Emanuel. And so who can argue with those two things? Obviously, if the family has forgiven me and the Black leadership in Chicago has forgiven me, What's the problem? You know, I just find it interesting that the woman that whose nomination they turned down, they decided to rescind. Mm. What, Nedra Tannen?
Yeah.
For something she tweeted or said, but Rahm Emanuel had a police cover up and a police murder, and he knew all about it. But that's not grounds for rescinding his nomination. I just find it amazing that in this country, nothing ever changes in terms of Black lives don't matter. And we are told that through actions and deeds and words every day of our lives.
All right, let's break down what Rahm had to say yesterday. And if you would, deconstruct it for us, Delmarie. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. So we already heard Rahm. You did a brilliant job of deconstructing that line about him thinking about it every day and week. Yes. Now I think it may be every hour. Now I haven't heard your explanation. Talk about Rahm's explanation as to why he waited so long to allow the tape to release. And let me just say one thing that was not brought up at the confirmation hearing yesterday. Rahm did not voluntarily release the video of Laquan McDonald's murder. He was ordered to do so by a Cook County judge in a Freedom of Information lawsuit. A very important point, Delmarie, that was left out of the confirmation hearing. It's not like Rahm said, well, I'm going to hold on to this thing and then, oh, well, I guess I'll release it now. He fought that. He had lawyers in court fighting against releasing the video. That said, he goes, the only reason he didn't release it was because there were ongoing investigations and he thought he should leave it to the experts, the law enforcement officers and the prosecutors to decide whether this was murder. And he should not politicize it by bringing it up, making a politician acting on it. I have my reaction to that, but I would love to hear your thoughts. When you heard him say that, what went on in your mind?
Well, there were so many things that I heard him say that just did not ring true to me in my recollection of the chronology of how things happened. But we know that there just could not be a coincidence that the video was kept under wraps all the while he was running for re-election in a campaign that went to a runoff that should have never gone to a runoff against a lesser known candidate. And that somehow miraculously after 5 days after, and that's what I can never get out of my head, 5 days after, his corporation counsel goes to the City Council Finance Committee and says, let's settle this for $5 million because if it goes to trial, it's going to cost so much more. And so this is the right thing to do for the city, not for the family, not for the voters, but let's just make it, you know, about the money. And so about the money, this is the right thing to do. And so, no, there was nothing voluntary about any of it. He was forced to do all of it. And he was even forced to acknowledge it because the city went up, you know, erupted in disbelief. And so he was forced to deal with it, much like he was forced to deal with it yesterday, because he had no intentions of dealing with it. And if you had looked at the media coverage leading up to it, you know, there's little opposition. That was the headlines. No significant opposition, I should say, to his nomination. There was very little coverage. I was in Washington. I, you know, gave a speech in front of the Capitol. We had more Japanese coverage than we had any other American coverage. And so it was a done deal. And I was told, why are you doing this? This is a done deal. But this is why I believe in divine intervention, because all of a sudden the hearing gets scheduled on the anniversary of Laquan McDonald's death. And then suddenly that gave us the opening that we needed to get the coverage that we should have been getting all along.
You did get coverage. And let's talk about that. No significant opposition. That was a line that ran, I believe it was Lynn Sweet in the Chicago Sun-Times. And Norman Solomon, your ally in this cause, wrote a letter to the paper addressing that. But I think that's the attitude of a lot of centrists and Dems and a lot of political observers, Del Marie, that folks like you and me, people on the left or people who dare to openly oppose Rahm Emanuel are insignificant.
Absolutely. We're absolutely insignificant. And what I find amazing is that as long as African-Americans, we don't leverage our power, we will remain insignificant. And so I was asked in Washington by a reporter, why is this a national issue? Why should anybody care outside of Chicago? And I said, because Biden would not be the president of the United States if it weren't for black people.
Yeah.
Black people threw him a lifeline. He ran for the third time in the twilight of his life, which should have been, you know, there's no way he's going to win. If he didn't win in his prime, he's certainly not going to win now. And he did because of black voters. And this is how you repay black voters. This is how, at the same time you're pushing the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act on the one hand, on the other hand, you give us a person who is the face of police misconduct, the face of a police murder, and the face of a police cover-up. How can you reconcile those two things?
By the way, what was the response when you said that to this reporter or whoever it was that had asked you the question?
Well, he just, you know, he's not from Chicago, and he sort of looked at me and, you know, and shook his head. You know, he nodded his head because I think he got it when I said that. But prior to that, it was like, you know, this is not a national issue. I mean, this is a local issue. And I'm saying, no, all black people should be up in arms over this.
You know what's so bizarre about the attitude is that if we could just remove race from the equation, which is impossible, Del Marie, as you know, but let's just pretend. The issue is there was evidence of a shooting. Forget who, the color of the person pulling the trigger or the color of the person absorbing the bullets. There was evidence of a shooting that was buried and concealed for over a year. So I really just don't understand how people have a hard time comprehending that a mayor who conceals evidence of a shooting would warrant being nominated to be ambassador to Japan. Do you follow what I'm saying? And it's like you have to translate it to this guy in terms of, well, you have to understand civil rights history. You know what I mean? That's how jaded.
I know. And I've had people say to me, you know, why is this so important to you that you're putting yourself on the line for this when it's going to happen anyway, because he's part of the good old boy network. And my response to that is, it may happen anyway. I'm an adult. I've been doing this for 30 years. Yes, it may happen anyway. But it shouldn't happen because we were silent. It should happen because we brought it to the forefront to let everybody know, Biden and Rahm, that everybody's not a damn fool. Everybody is not. Your charisma does not work on everybody. Whatever it is you think your mojo, everybody is not buying that. And so there are some people who are going to push back and tell the truth and stand for what is right. And even if you get nominated, that's fine. But it won't be because the world didn't know that there was opposition. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I love the fact that you pointed out it's getting more coverage in Japan than it is getting in the United States. I did not realize that. What's some of the kind of questions that you're getting from Japanese reporters?
Well, I just thought when they came out, I actually thought they were tourists just standing there watching us do this news conference. It wasn't until after the news conference that one of the reporters walked up to me and we started talking. And she said, no, this is very important to the Japanese people. And so I don't know what she took away from it. And, you know, but the bottom line is the fact that she said that this is very important to the Japanese people. And I know I did read an article in Japan and in the publication Japan Forward that was very it was better coverage than some of the American papers in terms of who Rahm Emanuel is, and talked about the Laquan McDonald case.
Well, I'm going to make it local in a little bit, but I just when I was listening to you talk about the significance and how Japanese reporters responded, I remember an old friend of ours, may she rest in peace, Pat Hill. Mm-hmm. When Mayor Daley was trying to get the Olympics to come to Chicago, and she was against, she's one of the few people that actually stood up against the Olympics, and I've mm-hmm. always given her a lot of credit for that. Former police officer, activist Pat Hill, and she sent a letter. And I can't remember if it was the U.S. Olympic Committee or the International Olympic Committee. I can't remember which phase it was of that process. But she sent a letter that was signed by a few other brave activists saying that Chicago should not be rewarded the Olympic Games because that's an honor. And we still have all these cases of regarding police torture that we've not dealt with. This is 2008 or mm-hmm. 2007 or something like that, Del Marie, you know, 13 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to honor Chicago at the Olympics, you got to recognize that there's some basic human rights issues here in the city of Chicago that we had not addressed with. So don't pretend it doesn't exist. And that kind of is at stake too. Like when Rahm says all the good things, I did this for the city, I did that for the city. And then who was it? The Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia goes, oh, well, you know, when you're mayor, bad thing, painful things happen. So it's a little bump along the way. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It happens on your watch. You can't, you know, you can't help it. You can't escape it. It's just the lay of the land. I've been so disappointed by some of these people, but I got to tell you, I suddenly became a fan of a man who I didn't even know very well at all, and that is Senator Jeff Merkley.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm a fan of his because thank God for him and that he, for whatever reason, it may be because he's pushed by his own constituents to be progressive. I don't care why he did it, the fact that he did it. And wouldn't let Rahm run out the clock because we know Rahm always does his 1, 2, 3 all the time. And he was getting ready to do that. And Merkley said, no, I know that tactic. You're not going to run out the clock and take up my time. Yeah. I asked you one question. I need you to answer it.
Yeah. No, he's seen that show before. By the way, where was Cory Booker?
I know, but I just went online because I was like, okay, Cory Booker, Rahm Emanuel. And I forgot that Rahm in 2013 campaigned for Cory Booker. So, you know, so then it all made sense.
It's campaigned better,
when he ran for senator. So it's better for him not to be there than to be there and vote yes. He probably will vote yes, but it's better for him not to be there. So I guess that's the decision he made.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that Rahm will be confirmed. My guess is that Jeff Merkley and Bernie Sanders are perhaps the only two Democratic senators who will vote against him. People on the show say, well, Elizabeth Warren, so maybe three. But they will be more than made up by Republicans.
Right. And if he's confirmed, this will not be the end of Rahm Emanuel in terms of Illinois. I believe in my heart of hearts, he will turn around and run for Dick Durbin's seat when Dick Durbin steps down?
Well, this issue will haunt him if he tries to run run for office in Illinois. I guarantee you, it's going to be very difficult for him to win in a Democrat, unless he becomes a Republican. Apparently has a lot of Republican support, so maybe he'll make that move. All right, now let's talk about the nine aldermen in the city of Chicago who signed a letter of support for Rahm. And I just want to read to you a text I got this morning, came early in the morning from an old friend of mine, a political junkie here in the city of Chicago, who probably doesn't want his name used, so I'll just read this, what he sent me. This is what I got this morning. This was with my my phone waiting for me when I woke up at the ungodly hour of 9 a.m. Del Marie Cobb. I was up bright and early today. All right, here we go. Ben, it's heartbreaking that members of the city council's Black caucus would sign a letter in support of Rahm. A Black kid got shot 16 times by a police officer who, by the way, is getting out of jail in February, and the mayor covered it up. That's a fact that we all know to be true. How can they in good conscience do that? This is the level of ineptitude and cowardice that we're up against, Ben. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts about the people who signed the letter is that we have an opportunity to, if in fact we're disillusioned and disheartened by their actions, we have an opportunity to unelect them the next election. And if the community is not happy with what they did, then I suggest that's what voters do. And if voters don't do that, then they were right in doing what they did. And they obviously feel right in doing what they did because they did it in broad daylight. And in essence, they said, there are no repercussions, which is why we can do this.
Well, I can see why they say that. Historically, I look back and I can only think of one time in my lifetime here in Chicago where there have been repercussions at the polls for local Black officials who were, quote unquote, on the wrong side of an issue. And that would have been in 1983 when I remember Robert Shaw, the Ninth Ward. This is going back in time. not only did he endorse Mayor Byrne over Harold Washington in that election, Del Marie, but he like stood in line for the opening. I remember Robert Shaw used to tease him about it. He had someone hold a place in line for when Mayor Byrne's office opened, her mayor office. He had someone, and then so he could be like first in line with his brother. Mm-hmm. So he lost to Perry Hutchinson. I can't believe I know this stuff. And he vowed never to make that mistake again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. You've talked about this a lot. It's like the disconnect between Black voters, the alienation, the apathy, et cetera, and so forth. There hasn't been a lot of historical evidence to suggest that there would be a backlash at the polls against, let's say, Emma Mitz or Michelle Harris or Jason Irvin or Walter Burnett or any of the others, Michael Scott, any of the others who signed the letter. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, when we did it with Jane Byrne and Bolandic over Snow, and then Jane Byrne, because we voted for her for change, and then she wound up being more of the same. Mm-hmm. And so we rejected her and voted for Harold Washington. And so we know we can do it. We know we have that ability. And even this last election proved that, with the last mayoral election, when you had, you know, a daily running and people voted for change. They didn't know the change, which is why Rahm got in there, because they voted for change. They didn't know the change. So it's not only necessary for people to vote for change, but they need to know the change that they're voting for, because people can, you know, wolves in sheep's clothing. You can pretend you're progressive, You can pretend you're going to do the right thing. You can pretend that, you know, I've got Black friends, and so I'm going to be sensitive to the needs of the Black community. But we've got to know that, and when we see it, address it. I mean, Rahm should have never gotten reelected. He should have never been reelected. I don't care that Barack Obama did commercials for him and told the Black community he's hard-headed, give him a second chance. You know, if somebody has knocked you upside your head, I don't need to say, well, I know he knocked you upside your head, but, you know, he won't do it again. No, he did it once. I'm going to make sure he doesn't do it again because I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to be the target. So, I mean, that's how we have to react. And we're not doing that. And I don't understand that. It doesn't make sense to me why we keep putting ourselves in a position to keep getting kicked in the butt. All you have to do is look at our communities. We got more Black people in office than we've ever had in history. And why do our communities look like they do?
All right, Del Marie, my next guest, Candace Castillo, is online. We're going to bring her on in a little bit. Before I do, I need to ask you for a prediction. Do you think Rahm Emanuel will be confirmed by the Senate to be Joe Biden's ambassador? How many Republicans do you think Republicans will we get? And which Democrats will have the guts to vote no?
That's a lot. So I do think he will be confirmed. Yes. I thought he would be confirmed before I started this quixotic journey, but I still think it was worth it and I wouldn't change anything. And I only wish more people joined in the journey. And was as outraged about Rahm Emanuel's nomination as we are about other things and or other groups being outraged, because we certainly should have gotten our way and Rahm's nomination should have been rescinded. Rahm, as far as I'm concerned, has always been a closeted Republican, so he will get as many Republican votes as he can get. And I won't be surprised by any of that. When Lindsey Graham comes out for you and you don't get no more Republican and anti the Black community than Lindsey Graham. So that says it all. What more do you need? This man is not for us. And just because he has Black friends, we need to understand your friends are not my friends. That's what Mandela said to Ted Koppel when he was released, when Ted Koppel was telling him, why were you friends with Cuba? And he was like, wait a minute, your enemies are not my enemies and your friends are not my friends. And we need to understand that.
Just a moment of pause. I forgot. That Ted Koppel asked him that question when he got out. The man was in jail for 37 years, and that's your question?
No, but when he did, I don't know if you remember when Ted Koppel had him on his show, one of the questions was why, you know, there was a relationship between the ANC and Cuba.
Yeah, no, I understand the question. Right. I just think it's just such a peculiar worldview.
But it's such an American worldview. Yeah. You know, everything emanates from our perspective. And as far as Mandela was saying, it's like they understood apartheid. They were siding with us. Yeah. America was siding with the South Africans, the white South Africans.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
we need to understand who our enemies are and who our friends are. Just because I pal around with somebody doesn't mean that that person automatically transfers to a friend of my community.
By the way, as she speaks, Rahm Emanuel is calling Del Marie Cobb to tell her, stop, get off that guy's show. Del Marie, thank you so much for coming on. It was really quick notice, but I had to reach out to you and talk about this because you and Norm Solomon have been at the front of this. And I thank you for that. I think it's an outrage that the Democrats would nominate Rahm Emanuel for anything. And I think it's an outrage that they're lining up to confirm him, and that Cory Booker was a no-show at the hearings yesterday. And that nine black aldermen in Chicago jumped aboard. And you know what, Del Marie, you and I have talked about this. Laquan McDonald's just one thing. 50 schools, mental health clinics.
Well, did you see the letter yesterday from the Latino alderman?
In the city of Chicago?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, you know, that they ticked off all the insults and injuries that Rahm heaped upon the black and brown communities. And those are the people we need to make sure get reelected because they stood up.
Yeah. Well, and until the Democratic Party sees the left wing of the party as something other than an insignificant opposition, I think this will continue. So there's been a very, this whole process has been very telling. Del Marie, about the state of politics, not just in Chicago, but nationally with the Democratic Party.
Well, it's been the most disappointing. I've been doing this a long time, and I got to tell you, I've never been so disappointed with the Democratic Party in my entire life.
Wow. I got to think, is this my biggest? You know what, Del Marie? I'm going to have to get back to you on that. Is this my biggest disappointment? There's so much. There's so many things on that list. But yes, it's a profoundly disappointing moment. All right, Del Marie, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Now joining us, Candace Castillo. Candace, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing well. As you heard, Candace Castillo, political director of SEIU Healthcare. So first of all, congratulations for your new gig.
Thank you.
The last time you were on my show, you were here as chief of staff to the great Jeanette Taylor. And it's been a while since you've been on the show. So welcome back, Cotter, as we like to say.
thank you. But I want to chime in on the conversation that you and Del Marie were having. And I got to give it up to Alderman Taylor, who, you know, to clear the record, I left in love. It was no division between us. But Alderman Taylor came out with a statement on Twitter yesterday, and she went through and ticked off all of the issues that Rahm had. You got to remember, she was a hunger striker, saying that as far as she knows, she is still a member of the Black Caucus in Chicago and does not support Rahm Emanuel. And it gets back to the question of who we elect and why we elect them. And she tagged every single member of the Chicago Black Caucus in that post to remind them of what they did. Once again, it goes back to who we elect and why we elect. And it also goes back to knowing who you are and whose you are. And even though I've run an election on the other side of Del Marie Cobb, who, if you don't know who she is, everybody in Illinois should know who she is. She's absolutely right. We have more black elected officials in Chicago, and look at the black community, but we also have a black mayor who claims she's done more for black people in Chicago than anybody else. So it's not just about electing them. It's about going with them and holding them accountable.
All right. When you got to you said something there, who we elect and why we elect them. And there's an attitude in the city of Chicago. It's a very transactional city, Candace. And so I believe embedded in the unstated reason why nine black aldermen signed that letter is the attitude that in Chicago, to get along, you got to go along. And that this is part of the game. And you got to make alliances and cut deals. You can't always get everything you want, but that's how you get stuff for your community. This has been explained to me by so many politicians, elected officials in the city of Chicago, Candace, not just black politicians, but white politicians and Latino politicians, et cetera, with whom I've disagreed. So we're having an argument or, you know, a discussion or a debate. And they go, Ben, you don't understand. This is how you play the game. This is how we get things for our community. What's your response to that in line to in, when you think about it in terms of signing a letter endorsing Rahm?
At what cost? Right. I think it's how you play the game. Ask a lot of those people sitting on the Latino caucus. They play the game very well. Right. A lot of the members of the Black caucus don't play the game very well. Here's the big difference. Some of the Latino caucus members play the game to an extent, and they understand the cost of playing the game to their communities. The Latino community in Chicago is in peril, too. Anybody who doesn't think that should take a closer look at Chicago. But I, as much as I disagree with the Alderman Villegas, sometimes Alderman Villegas is not going to go against mostly his people. He's going to say, I'm going to play the game to a certain extent. Unlike some of our brothers and sisters who I wouldn't say they just play the game to a certain extent. I would say Alderman Taylor says this, and of course I'm going to use Alderman Taylor, still my favorite alderman in the city of Chicago, but she says it's not enough to elect me. You got to go to City Hall with me. Too many times, people in communities where they're working, where the life expectancy is 15 years less than on the north side, not because of gun violence, but because of heart disease and diabetes. When we're looking at our hospitals closing, when we looked at our schools closing and mental health clinics under Rahm, we're tired. The last thing a lot of Black people in Chicago want to think about is politics. They are overwhelmed and tired. And like, I don't want to go to City Hall. Why? What difference would it make? When it would make all the difference in the world. I bet you very good money if there were a lot of people looking at more of what some of these aldermen on the South and West side did and looking at it differently, they'll be playing a different game and singing a different song. I will say, with my former chief of staff hat on, it's amazing the amount of calls some aldermen's offices don't get and the amount of calls they do get.
What do you mean by that?
So a lot of Southside aldermen, and not all, get a lot of calls about trees, grass, vacant lots. And one thing I used to do when I was Alderman Taylor's chief of staff, well, while I have you on the phone about this tree, what do you think about XYZ in the city budget? I don't know. I don't care. Get this tree down. Are they justified in that to a certain extent? Yes, because a tree is the emergency that's going to fall on their house. But once I have the conversation with them of, hey, there was a hiring freeze in the Department of Forestry. That's why there are 100, there's 100 less people in the Department of Forestry. And that's why they're a year behind in cutting down your tree. But they gave this much more money to the police department. What do you think about that? And then it changes the conversation. Again, that person now has more questions and is more likely to watch a city council meeting or call the alderman or even have questions about, well, why did more money go to the police department when I don't exactly feel safe? But again, it's not just about electing the person. Who are we sending to City Hall with them? And a lot of them that signed that letter been there for a long time.
All right. I'm now going to read. I already read part of the text that I received this morning from an old friend of mine who's very active politically in the city of Chicago, asked to remain anonymous. So he was very upset about the nine aldermen signing that letter for Rahm. I already read the first part to Del Marie. They said it's a level of ineptitude and cowardice that we're up against. And then here's his two more paragraphs. Get your thoughts on this. The alderman literally breathed life into political character was all but dead. For what? I bet you they didn't even get anything. These people don't understand the game. Just imagine what they could have extracted. They don't even know what to ask for. We could have forced Rahm to go to the president and get a shit ton of money for Chicago, presidential level appointments, and so much more. There's really no value you can place on the letter. Let me be clear. I would not have signed the letter. I would not even have voted to approve the settlement. However, if you're going to do it, at least get something for the community. And that's a very transactional Chicago viewpoint, Candace. And I don't completely dismiss it. Because if you're going to sell your soul to help advance, to save the political career of Rahm Emanuel, get something for it. Okay? And I see no evidence whatsoever that anybody in the city of Chicago from the nine wards whose aldermen signed this letter got anything for those aldermen essentially saving Rahm's career. Your response?
Woo. You're right. You're right. But even some of the ones that signed the letter, and I'm not going into names, look at their wards over the time that Rahm was in office with their allegiance to Rahm. And some of them have the same allegiance to Lori. What are they getting? But what is their community calling them out on? Again, and I'll stand on it. It's not just who you elect, it's who's going with them. So if I'm an alderman in Chicago and my community is saying, fix these vacant lots, but they're not saying anything else and don't care how I fix them, I mean, what am I going to do then? He's absolutely right. Politics in Chicago can be transactional. And historically, it has been transactional. The fact that they didn't get anything, but historically they got nothing from Rahm. If you look back on it, a lot of the aldermen got stuff from Daley. But historically from Rahm, these are the same people whose communities got nada. And they're getting nada from Lori. But historically, they are going to cling to that quote-unquote position of power.
I'll go one step further. Instead of getting nothing from Rahm, they got negative nothing. He closed 50 schools.
They got negative nothing, but then the amount of people that didn't fight back. I will be the first to say that the only problem with Black people anywhere is that Black people think it's a problem with Black people anywhere. I'll say that first. However, the one problem I do see is we like to say, well, that person's in power, and we got to wait till 2023 to get them out of power instead of calling their office and challenging them or fighting against them. We want to wait to an election to have a fight with somebody. No. The American process has only gotten better because we fought the process. That's it. That's how politics works. That's how governing works. We are supposed to fight and question. So if you don't agree with Anthony Beall, if you don't agree with Kerry Austin, you're not supposed to just put it on social media. You're supposed to call the office and say, I don't agree with you, and here's why, and I'm a constituent, and here's my address. Drive past my house, you might see somebody else's campaign sign. Or thank you for doing X, Y, and Z. But I thought, Anthony Beall, your cop house idea was the wackiest thing I have ever seen. And your ECPS vote sucked. But I really like this community center that we have. Thanks. You can say whatever. But just waiting to election time to challenge somebody is the absolute wrong thing. Or the only answer isn't running against somebody. Sometimes the answer is doing right what they did with Alderman Taliaferro and go to his office. But it's unfortunate that most people that were in front of Taliaferro's office didn't live in his ward.
Yeah, that that would help to live in his ward. By the way, that is a great quote, which I took. Now I can't read my Iran. The only problem with black people anywhere is to say that there's a problem with black people anywhere. Would it just deconstruct that line once before we move on? What exactly were you getting at?
So you hear a lot of people say, you know, the problem with the black community is. The problem with the black community is we don't take care of ourselves. The problem with the black community is we don't stick together. The problem with the black community is whatever. Single mothers, fatherless homes. Keep going. You can keep the list going. That's the whole problem, that we say something is wrong with us. I have never in my life heard the problem with the Jewish community is. The problem with the Irish community is. The problem with white people in America is. I've never heard that. But when it's applied to black and brown people, I hear it all the time. The problem with the black community is that we think that there's an overwhelmingly difference in our struggles and our problems versus other communities. It's just not on the news as much.
Well put. All right, let's move out of Chicago for a moment and talk national politics. I know there's some matters in Congress, before Congress, that you really want to alert people to the significance of this legislation, how important it is for the Democrats to pass something while they still have. We'll get into the midterms. People don't know this about Candace. She's a political junkie. Well, you know about it if you've listened to her on my show. She's a political junkie. She's junkie. She used to come on my show all the time to break down the presidential debates. So you're a political junkie. We can talk about the midterms coming up. But right now, the Dems, they control the Senate. I have that in quotes because I'm not quite sure how much they control the Senate. And they control the House. And yet they haven't been able to pass anything in months in terms of significant legislation. The clock is ticking as we head toward those midterms. I'm wondering if they'll ever be able to pass any significant legislation. So, Candace, why don't you talk about, first of all, the legislation that's really important for Democrats to pass, and then we'll get into whether you think they can advance it. Go ahead.
Number one, Joe Manchin controls the Senate. I'm not sure what Democrats do there, but Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are controlling the Senate, unfortunately. And that's something that we need to figure out and stop. But the legislation that means a lot, not only to me personally, but to SEIU and to millions of workers, is the Build Back Better plan. Now, most people don't know it as Build Back Better. They know it as, you know, the big piece of infrastructure legislation that Biden is trying to have pass, right? They don't know it as Build Back Better. But particularly in Build Back Better is assistance for people who are home care workers. So most of us don't even look at them as home care workers. When we have seniors in our family and that person that helps that your senior get around their house so they can stay in their house or helps them cook and clean or even sits down with them and companionship. Not only do we represent those people, but as we have an aging population in America, it's really important for us to have those people around. And with COVID, we know the nursing home system is not working for the vast majority of our seniors. This is a place that our seniors can get the care that they deserve and stay in their homes a lot of time. The Build Back Better program makes more people eligible for that and gives a whole nother rate of pay for that service.
And what's the likelihood right now that it could advance through the Senate?
So going back and forth with that, right? Because it could advance. However, they've cut funding in that so many times. It'll also make a difference for child care providers because it raises their pay. There are some child care providers that make less than minimum wage. So the people that take care of your children and the people that take care of your mother are making less than minimum wage. Those are the exact wrong people that you want making minimum wage. So both of these things are in Build Back Better. And I know everybody wants to bring up 105 things about what the Biden administration is not doing. But this is something that they are really, really trying to pass. Now, can it get past Joe Manchin? Who knows, right? Because it does have energy things in it that we need. We need green energy. We need infrastructure to give us another system other than coal. What we don't talk about in Chicago is the environmental concerns. Literally, you can get a testing kit to come to your home to figure out if there's lead in the water because there's lead in so much of the water in Chicago. We don't talk about that. But this will help clear up. Build Back Better also clears up most of the environmental concerns. In Illinois, as usual, most of our Democratic caucus is already signed on to it. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are the problems that they always are. Of course, they don't want to sign on to it because, well, coal, money from the hospitals and the nursing home lobbyists who don't want to see this happening. It's amazing to me. It's amazing to me how many of our senators are also apologists for Joe Manchin. So we need Build Back Better to pass. So even though all of our congresspeople are signed on to it, all of our Democratic congresspeople in the Chicagoland area and downstate are signed on to it, we need to be pushing them to make sure that this does not get lost. And they don't cut from it anymore. I got an 84-year-old grandmother at home. We definitely have a home care provider. My kid just got out of child care. That was necessary. And it's necessary for a lot of working parents to go back to work. If I don't know who's watching my kid when I go back to the office, then it's going to be real hard for me to go back to the office. So all of these are in Build Back Better. And it's important that it passes.
I'm with you 100% on this. I went through experience. I've talked about it on the show, Candace, with my parents, who both have passed. But in those last years, I don't know what we would have done without the home care workers who helped us out in so many ways. And I feel like we're just disconnected from reality in this country in so many ways. The fact that not one we're talking so much on this show about what can Democrats do about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Candace, we talk about this all the time. And just left unmentioned is the fact that you can't get one Republican to sign on. And I know Republicans have aging parents who need home care workers.
So a lot of people have asked me, and I got asked this question today. How did you end up working in politics from organized labor, and why did you go back? Well, one, I started working in politics from organized labor because 42% of union households voted for Trump. So many Republicans vote against their own issues and their own interests. It's ridiculous. So then you have the right media lifting up this $600 transfer if you get something through Cash App, they want to tax it. They're lifting that up, but they're not talking about child care and home care in Build Back Better at all. But they want to lift up all the talking points of the right. Now, Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin, it's there's a lot of unions that supported Kristen Sinema and getting elected. A lot of labor unions that was like, yes, this is our person. So just like I said with city council members, we need to go to her. If she's y'all person, then she deserves those phone calls. She deserves her office flooded. And I get it's COVID, we can't flood her office, but we can damn sure make sure that at every fundraiser she has, she fills it. The same thing with Joe Manchin. It's amazing how many donors that he has that are the same donors for the Republican colleagues. Do you remember being a couple of months ago when a number of senators got COVID? And it was a bunch of Republican senators, and they were all at Joe Manchin's house.
Yeah.
His boathouse.
His boathouse, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shows a lot about who he's partying with on the weekends, which may just say a lot about who he is. We cannot be apologizing. Oh, Joe always falls in the right spot. That doesn't work anymore. I don't need you to fall in the right spot. I need you to be in the right spot.
Well, I've been struggling with this one. And I hear what you say about Kyrsten Sinema. She's probably more vulnerable, politically speaking, to pressure if she cares. We talked about this at length. Maybe she'll just jump to the Republican Party. I don't think she'll win in a Republican primary. Joe Manchin's a different ball game completely. So I'll ask you this question. Should Democrats resign themselves to passing the best they can get under these circumstances and then move on to the midterms and then to try to correct this stalemate in the midterms? Should we just subscribe to that notion? Just let Manchin and Sinema write the bill and then just pass it just to get something passed?
Hell no. No, that doesn't work. Something that does not help working families, something that doesn't correct the issues with the environment, something for something's sake. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of something for something's sake. Even with the Justice and Policing Act falling apart, I am pissed that fell apart. But we just didn't need something for something's sake. We need substantial change. And there's too many Democrats that are like, well, hemming and hawing. Time out for hemming and hawing. We don't need any hemming and hawing. We need fighters. We need people who are going to roll up their sleeves, talk to their constituents, and work. And just going back to Kyrsten Sinema for a second, on MSNBC a couple months ago, they asked Kyrsten Sinema a question, and she literally said, "What are you talking about? I'm right here. I'm standing by the elevator. I'm right here." She doesn't care. That's the thing. And maybe that goes back to some members of the State House, the State Senate, City Council. They're saying, "I'm right here. What are you talking about? I'm here. And all I have to do is be here." That's not enough. Mm-hmm. Constituents have to hold people accountable at every level of government. State, city, county, municipality. We got to hold people accountable.
All right, Candace, we'll close with this. You said something to me in passing. I'd love for you to go into greater detail on. When we were talking before the show, you said in passing, you're very worried about the midterms. What are you exactly worried about, and how do you think it should be addressed? Go ahead.
It's funny. I just got off a call that I basically said I am going into 3 straight years of elections. And some of them I worked real hard for, and that's elected school board and ECPS, right? But the midterms, Democrats could very much so lose in these midterms, which would be rhetoric on the Biden presidency. And looking at the numbers, like, the Democrats have lost ground among black men and lost ground among the Latinx population. Here's what I'll say, speaking of black people. There's a lot of black men that have lost faith in the Democratic Party for lots of great reasons. Not only the morality rate of black women dying, and nobody's talking about the Voting Rights Act, it seems to have died. Justice and policing has died. And now home care, child care, all of that stuff, if they don't get their act together, then a lot of people don't see the benefits for black Americans voting overwhelmingly for this party. And that's a problem. It's having the political courage to do things like get rid of the filibuster. It's having the political courage to expand the court. And it's us holding them accountable on more than social media.
Yeah, into that list, I would add make D.C. a state.
And D.C. statehood and federal marijuana decriminalization, even though white folks smoke more marijuana than black people, but that's a whole different conversation.
Well, that is a different conversation. I'm not even sure that that's true proportionally, but that would be an interesting debate. Who smokes more reefer, black people or white people? I'll put it to you this way. At the very least, it's a tie. Proportionally speaking, proportionally, relatively to.
Proportionately speaking, I might agree with that.
Yeah. Proportionally, I'm not saying there's more white people in this country than black people. So, of course, literally more white people are smoking reefer than black people. But proportionally, I say it's a tie. And I've done extensive research into this, Candace Castillo. I just want to let you know, okay?
I think the part of Alton, Illinois may have, too.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. All right, Candace Castillo, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been too long since your last appearance. Going to have to twist your arm to get you to come on more often, all right?
I'll be back. I'll talk to you soon, Ben.
All right, that's a great Candace Castillo. Thank you very much. And I want to thank Delmarie Cobb. She did an outstanding job, as I know she would. And I also want to thank the man, the myth, the legend, the pride of joy of all Illinois, without whom this show would be possible. And as everybody, from Candace Castillo to Delmarie Cobb and even Rahm Emanuel himself would tell you, back home in Alton, they call him Dr. D. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody. Play the radio.